This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and thanks for joining us on our radio Main Street all across North Dakota this time of day. And this is a special day on Main Street because it's our summer movie preview. And this is an important time of year for the movie producers in Hollywood. It's defined as the first Friday in May and goes through Labor Day weekend, and it's very important for the box office receipts for Hollywood. So we're going to talk with Matt Olean, our resident critic here at Prairie Public. Hello, Matt.
Hi, Doug.
Brittany Goodman, who's also with us regularly on these preview shows. Brittany is with the library faculty at MSU Moorhead. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Doug.
And Tony Tilton has a lot of hats. He works at KVLY. He's the general manager of Moorhead's Community Access Television, and all three of them are veterans with the Fargo Film Festival. Well, let's start with this mid-May. This is Friday, May 17th, and we've got big movies coming, but Avengers Endgame is hanging out there, Matt.
I think, Doug, the Avengers Endgame is like a shadow hanging over the entire summer. Even though it came out in late April, it just felt like it was the kickoff to summer, and the box office has been so enormous. The reviews have been so good. I don't think anything can top it. Do you, Tony?
This is the biggest one of the year.
Yeah. And don't you think, too, I think, without revealing spoilers, Tony and I have seen it, there's been a lot of criticism of Game of Thrones, that they're not ending things the way they maybe should have. I can't think of a better way that this film wrapped up things. Can you, Tony? Without giving spoilers away, I felt they wrapped this segment up well.
I haven't heard from too many fans that are unsatisfied with the Avengers and the Marvel wrap-up, and I think it's been handled perfectly. And you got to consider, you know, it's a comic book movie, yes, but this is a movie that had how many actors and roles that had to be all had their own little moment in this film.
And the credits go for a long time.
But, I mean, it was extremely well done.
It was.
Well, it's pushing $2 billion. I haven't seen it yet. Brittany, have you?
No, it's not my kind of film. Sorry.
You. Well, let's go to Tony's kind of film.
Sure.
John Wick, Chapter 3, Parabellum.
Yeah. Well, the John Wick series is interesting because I hadn't seen the first one in the theaters, and I saw it later and became a big fan. It's Keanu Reeves, and it's a hitman who has retired, and he's married, and his wife gets cancer, and he sees her through this cancer. She dies, and the day he's coming home from the funeral, she's left him a present of a brand new puppy. Well, these guys cross his path, and they wind up wanting to steal his car, and he resists. They wind up killing his dog, which precipitates him killing everybody else.
That's a big mistake with John Wick.
That's a big mistake. That's the first movie, and this continues on. So the thing about these films, though, they're incredible action sequences in these films. The choreography is amazing.
Choreography is the word.
It is really fantastic, and they're so well done and so well made. They're just fun to watch. They are not for children under 17 years of age. They're definitely R-rated films and made for that.
They are bloody.
There.
Okay. Besides Keanu Reeves, it's Halle Berry and Lawrence Fishburne, so it's an interesting cast. How about The Sun is Also a Star, Brittany?
That opened today, and I've read a lot of reviews, and they're kind of fair to middling, I would say. It seems like it is a movie that's trying to be something like Before Sunrise, or maybe Once. Two young people meet in New York City, and the male protagonist declares that the woman is going to fall in love with him by the end of the day.
Okay. How about these people who are in it? I mean, John Leguizamo, I know. The rest of them are kind of different names for me.
Well, the young people aren't as well known, are they, Brittany? So this could be a breakout film for both of them, possibly.
The camera seems to love them. The trailer does almost look effervescent. Yeah. I mean, it does look good, but the reviews that I've read is that the chemistry is maybe not quite there.
Okay. So a teen romance. Okay.
We'll find out this weekend if it has box office power.
Well, let's go to next weekend, the 24th. Aladdin. Boy, a live-action remake.
Guy Ritchie's Aladdin.
Yeah, so Guy Ritchie. Guy Ritchie's directing this. This is, I think, the weirdest director to source material casting I've seen since Robert Altman directed Popeye. I can't imagine Guy Ritchie directing Aladdin, but Tony, he must be wanting to reestablish his credentials
I think it's one of those things where you got to make a good movie or a big money-making movie so you can make three more bad ones, and that's Guy Ritchie's kind of palette right now.
Well, I think of him with guns and action
but
all
he's done
stuff.
Some pretty bad ones recently, so I think this is his way to get
in. And the King Arthur did not come off, did it, Tony? It did not. What they were supposed to. I'm curious if people are going to go to Aladdin or if they sense the cash grab here by Disney. I don't know. I my kids have no desire to see this movie.
Nobody I know has any desire to see this.
So who's Brittany, the audience then? Yeah. I mean, I don't know who the audience is.
Well, Will Smith is the genie. So
no Robin Williams.
Hard to top Robin Williams in that role. I don't know. I think whether Aladdin does well at the box office might be a signal for Lion King and future endeavors by Disney. You know, Dumbo did okay, but not Boffo or anything like that. So we'll see. I'm lukewarm on Aladdin.
Let's talk about Booksmart. That's looking pretty favorable.
It's one of the movies that I want to see the most. It's Olivia Wilde, very talented and beautiful. It's her directorial debut. And basically, it's two smart, good girls that decide on the last day of high school that they're going to cut loose and do some of the partying and have some fun like their counterparts are, who are also getting into school. And the reviews are, it's smart, it's rude, and it's very funny.
And Olivia Wilde's on the other side of the camera, so interesting.
Like Brittany said, reviews are great on this so far, so this could be one of those breakout teen movies of the summer.
Brightburn, Tony, this has got an interesting idea.
Well, it's the idea that what if Superman were actually a bit of it more damaged when he comes to Earth, and he's a child that isn't all there and turns into a horror element or villain. And so it's the Superman story, but taken from the other side of things. As James Gunn did this film, and this was put off for about a year or so because of the controversy he had last year with leaving Disney's Guardians of the Galaxy, and then now he's back. But it looks very interesting. It's ostensibly a horror film. So it's what if Superman were bad.
Well, when I was a kid, of course, I read Superman comics, and there was sort of a storyline that was opposite Superman, a bad Superman back then in the comic book days.
Yep. This is a little more like what if Superman was, the child was unsettled. You know, the idea is that maybe adopting an alien child you find in a field is not such a great idea.
Elizabeth Banks looks really good in this, too. Yep.
Okay.
She's the mom.
Well, let's go to the next Friday, the last one in May, with Godzilla, King of the Monsters. This is a brand new idea, I take it.
Well, for those of us who were around in the, grew up in the 60s and 70s and saw the Godzilla imports from Tokyo, they did all sorts of monster mash movies with Godzilla fighting all sorts of different things. And this one is that updated to present-day CGI with American actors, unlike Raymond Burr, just phoning it in on insert shots.
I remember those.
That was the first one. So, this is a sequel to the one from 2 years ago that was actually pretty decent, and Legendary Pictures did that. So we'll see. I mean, it's stuck in the middle of the summer stuff, but I think it's got a week or two where it can actually survive for those who want to see this movie. It's one of those, though, again, I'm kind of wondering about the audience for it. Mm-hmm. People went to the Godzilla. That was one thing, but now it's becoming a monster mash, and I don't know.
It's a busy weekend, though, Brittany. Ma is coming out.
I've never seen Octavia Spencer play the evil person, but this one looks kind of interesting. I think I'll go. I can't tell if it's comic horror, mm-hmm. though. And it's also got Juliette Lewis and Luke Evans in it. But the premise is Octavia Spencer gets some kids to come to her house to party, and things go awry. They get a little bit more than some free booze, I think.
Okay.
It looks like a lot of torture. And here's Olivia's quote when she was asked to be in the film. She said she signed up to reverse the age-old stereotype. Her quote, black people always die in the first 15 minutes of a horror film. So she's out to reverse that and do some torture of her own, I feel.
Okay. How about Rocket Man? That winds up that weekend, Matt.
Boy, this is one that clearly they're trying to do for Elton John what Bohemian Rhapsody did for Queen. Mm-hmm. But Elton John's still alive. Freddie Mercury's not. So Taron Egerton, my understanding is he does his own singing in this film, which Rami Malek did not do in Bohemian Rhapsody for the most part. So the trailer looks interesting. It looks like the same motif as Bohemian Rhapsody. Mm-hmm. Will it catch fire like Bohemian did? I don't know. I don't. I'm really on the fence on this. What do you guys think?
A lot of friends are very interested in seeing this, so, as am I. And at the Cannes Film Festival, it got a standing ovation.
Okay.
That just happened.
The thing that comes to my mind, though, is that, you know, Hollywood is that people talk, and of course, Bohemian Rhapsody is being produced, and somebody's going, let's come up with another idea here about...
Oh, there's definitely that's what they're going for, Doug. Brittany, what do you think? Do you think this is going to be a hit?
I do think it's going to be a hit. I think people really like Elton John, and the trailers I've seen is Edgerton does a good job.
Yeah. Actually, I've heard very good things about Edgerton. So.
And you know, the thing about Bohemian Rhapsody, everyone, is that was a troubled production.
Right.
This was not supposed to be the breakout hit because, you know, Bryan Singer was the director, Tony, and he was absent at all the award shows because of his off-screen issues.
Right.
Well, we've broken into June, Friday, June 7th, Dark Phoenix, Tony.
It's the end of the Fox ownership of Marvel characters. So Fox Studios have been enveloped by Disney now. So this was in production before that happened. So this is their X-Men franchise, and they're wrapping it up with this film. And this is the rebooted X-Men franchise with a lot of the younger actors in it. Sophie
Turner
from Game of Thrones plays the lead character. And it could be... Okay, we'll see. A lot of people are dubious about it because Hugh Jackman is no longer part of this franchise. And everyone
Lawrence
knows that it's all going to be rebooted in a couple of years by Disney with all new people. So it's kind of like, well, we're just going to see what happens.
Well, Matt mentioned Jennifer Lawrence is in it. So is Michael Fassbender and James McAvoy.
James McAvoy
But no Hugh Jackman. So again, Tony makes a good point. Will that chip away at the box office slightly? We just don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Late Night, Brittany.
Oh, I want to see this. I'm a big fan of Mindy Kaling and also Emma Thompson. And basically, Emma Thompson is a late night talk show host who is losing in the ratings. She's been doing it a long time. And they decide to bring in Mindy Kaling to kind of shake it up and give a different touch. And it looks like they have some great on-screen chemistry.
Hugh Dancy and John Lithgow are in it as well. So.
Yes.
And, of course, we all love behind-the-scenes TV stuff.
Right.
Okay. Matt, the last black man in San Francisco.
Yeah, this looks interesting. Starring Jimmy Fails, directed by Joe Talbot, kind of based on their growing up experiences in San Francisco. It's based on Jimmy Fails' life growing up, about a young man's efforts to reclaim the Victorian home he grew up in amidst rapid gentrification. So a lot of social issues here. We've seen Doug and Tony and Brittany. There is an audience for these films. Mm-hmm. Last year, a lot of films about the black experience in the United States that did very well at the box office. So this looks promising.
Yeah.
What about the you mentioned that Disney has acquired Fox.
Right.
I mean, who are the gigantic studios now that hold so much?
There's only four of them anymore. It's Disney now, and Universal and Warner Brothers are the main three, and then a lesser extent would be Paramount.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What about Amazon, though?
Amazon is getting there, but they're not theatrical yet. That's the thing. For theatrical, and between Amazon and Netflix, they're trying to get in there, but they're not quite at that point.
Well, the boundaries are changing.
It is changing.
And it's interesting because,
I think in 5 years it might be totally shifted the other way.
All right. Yeah. Well, we are looking at the summer movie season. It's important to Hollywood. And, of course, on a rainy weekend like we're about to have, a lot of people might be going to the movies. Matt Olin is with us, and Brittany Goodman and Tony Tilton. And we'll be back with our summer movie preview in just a moment.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by AARP North Dakota, protecting families from fraud and scams, and helping more than 62,000 family caregivers who help make it possible for their loved ones to live at home. Creating real possibilities in North Dakota. AARP.org/ND.
On the next New Yorker Radio Hour, the secrets and craft of James Taylor.
The idea of that song is it was sort of like one-note samba. It's just that da-na-da-da-da-da. And then it changes
the harmony
underneath it, and that's a very Brazilian, very Jobim thing to do. So I was hugely impressed by that stuff.
James Taylor, next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour.
That's coming up tomorrow at 3 Central, 2 Mountain, right here on Prairie Public.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and I'm with Tony Tilton, Matt Olean, and Brittany Goodman. We're looking at our summer movie preview, and we have made it all the way to the middle of June, Friday, June 14th. The Dead Don't Die, Matt.
Looking forward to this one. Jim Jarmusch, interesting director. He's got an interesting history. You know, good films like Dead Man with Johnny Depp was fascinating. You go all the way back to his early films. This is a zombie comedy, and Bill Murray is in it, Tilda Swinton, Tom Waits. I cannot wait for this. Yep. It looks like more of a mainstream-type Jim Jarmusch film, but I'm looking forward to this one, actually.
Well, Jim Jarmusch is very innovative, typically.
He is, yep. Okay. He's definitely an auteur, independent filmmaker that really got his start in the 80s.
Okay.
And the cast looks amazing.
It does, yeah.
Well, here's an unusual title, Men in Black, International.
International. Okay. Well, they're rebooting the Men in Black franchise, and now it's not Tommy Lee Jones and Will Smith anymore, but now it's Chris Hemsworth, you know him as Thor, and Tessa Thompson.
Oh, yeah.
Who was also in the Thor
And Rebecca
movies.
Ferguson.
And Rebecca Ferguson, yeah. So it's trying to do what the franchises like Fast and the Furious have done. They've embraced an international approach to this, which guarantees them $1 billion worldwide. I mean, they're going to make a ton of money with this movie.
Because that's another idea that we need to get to.
That we're
I
not
need
just
to wrap my head
American-centric, that you're, they're casting people from around the world in different cultures to be part of this movie as a, as an ensemble so you can kind of reach all those different people that everybody participates. It looks like a fun movie. We'll see if it lives up to the comedic stuff they did in the first two.
So. I love Men in Black, actually. I always enjoyed those.
I like the star pairing here.
Yes.
Hemsworth, of course.
Oh, they've got
huge
great
star.
Chemistry.
We love Tessa Thompson. She won the Best Actress Award at our Fargo Film Festival 2 months ago for Littlewoods and was very gracious when Greg Carlson found her at Sundance. We know he certainly wanted her to come to Fargo, and she was working. But she took a picture with Greg and was very nice to him. So that's nice to know that that she was she's blowing up right now, and we wish her well.
Well, if you saw Thor Ragnarok earlier, she was the co-star in that and continues a bit in Avengers Endgame. They've got great chemistry, so
yes,
this should
they
be
do.
Fun.
Well, here is another classic, Shaft. Three generations of Shaft. Tony?
Well, you know, I love the original, and as I saw the remake with Samuel L. Jackson, which wasn't really a remake. It was kind of a reboot because he plays his son or nephew. I can't remember what it was, but Richard Roundtree is in this film as well. So it's he and Samuel Jackson, and then there's his son or nephew, Jesse Usher, is in this. So it's continuing, and apparently it's like a generational thing, which is interesting because Shaft was one of the original blaxploitation films that really launched that genre in there, 71, 72. So it might be interesting to see what they do with it. Tim Story directed it, you know, and I think they're trying to bring that kind of vibe to it. You know, Shaft is one of those guys that harkens back to an age of, distinct manliness, you could say.
Well.
So it's going to be a certain attitude present. So, I mean, it could be interesting and fun to go back that way, or it may not work for, you know, anymore.
I look forward to seeing the trailer because I'm kind of curious what they'll do with the music.
Right.
That's a
famous. They don't have Isaac Hayes anymore to do the music, unfortunately, but, you know, if you see what they can do.
Okay. How about the next weekend, Friday, June 21st? And that is Toy Story 4. Now, where have I heard that name before?
What I'm interested here is, does this franchise still have the legs to pull off a – or to contend as the top box office film of the summer? I think it has a chance, but is it too long since Toy Story 3? Again, we – sometimes when these things get spread out too far, we saw this a little bit with The Incredibles.
Right.
You just wonder. But everybody loves the Toy Story franchise. What do you guys think?
I think I'll go see it. Mm-hmm. I've liked all the other ones, and it's got a lot of the same people in it. It's got Tom Hanks.
Right.
But whether it's going to, like, beat out everything else this summer, I don't know.
It'll be huge, and it's one of the few kids-centered movies that anyone can go see. So it's going to do very well. It won't beat Avengers, I don't think. But
no. But for summer, post-Avengers, it could.
Yeah, it could be one of the big ones of the summer, that and what's coming up in early July.
Now, is this Pixar?
This is Pixar,
yes.
Well, their animation, I just love the look of it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, artistically, you can't beat them. And as long as they can maintain the writing, Incredibles 2, for me, was a missed opportunity for what they did. It was not anything close to the original film. It was good, but it was like a C-grade movie compared to the original film. So hopefully they haven't lost their touch.
Well, let's go to Friday, June 28th. We're closing out the month of June with Yesterday, Matt.
I'm really looking forward to this one. This is directed by Danny Boyle, Oscar winner, of course, for Slumdog Millionaire. The premise in the trailer looks fascinating. There is a power outage all over the world.
Oh.
And the lead character, played by Hamish Patel, he's kind of an amateur musician, and he's playing the song Yesterday one day for his friends. And they're like, oh, that's a great song. Where did you... Did you write that? He's like, no, Paul McCartney wrote it. And they have no – the world suddenly has no clue the Beatles ever exist. They've
interesting
the memory of them has vanished. Right. So he starts singing Let It Be and all these songs, and he becomes a huge star. Right. These are great songs. And that's the premise. And right. I think it could be hilarious.
Sounds brilliant.
Yes.
If it's good writing.
It's
oh,
a celebration
yeah.
of the Beatles
yes,
in a lot of
is.
Respect. Is what they're saying is that – you know, you take the Beatles out of context and you put them back in, it's still timeless music. That's some of the best ever made is from this era, you know. So it's interesting. I love the trailer. I was really wondering – the description I read of it was – I couldn't figure it out what mm-hmm. they were talking about. Once you see the trailer and you understand mm-hmm. the premise. Then
I would have loved to have been there for the pitch.
Right.
And I wonder – we don't know, will he be found out? Will he be exposed? That's what we're
right.
not sure from the trailer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because we'll see.
Well, let's go to our news break with the big, big movie of the summer maybe, but maybe not Avengers Endgame, mm-hmm. Spider-Man Far From Home.
I think it's going to be right up there or close second to Avengers. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be quite as big, of course, but it's continuing. It's the last movie in this current Marvel phase, what they call it. And then they start rebooting and redoing with new characters and some continuing. So they're wrapping up their stuff. So every Marvel fan who was waiting for days to go into Avengers is going to be waiting to see Spider-Man Far From Home because it's the wrap-up of all the Marvel films.
So will it be Tom Holland's
oh,
last
yeah.
one then?
No, I don't think so. He'll
no.
probably be continuing.
Oh, okay.
And they'll keep things going. But like the Avengers, there will be some different people coming into the Avengers and things without spoiling anything. But so everyone's waiting to see what's going to happen. But this movie's gotten some raves already about some of the things they've done with it.
And Jake Gyllenhaal's in it.
Yep.
So he comes on board with the cast.
And you had Jon Favreau and yep. a few other people in the film as well.
Well, I'm intrigued by the yeah. Peter Parker character because like yeah. Batman, those roles have moved on and on
right.
and on. So,
that's right.
And it is, of course, a special effects festival.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we are holding our summer movie a preview show here on Main Street. And we've got Tony Tilton and Matt O'Lean and Brittany Goodman, three people who know their movies. They go to them all the time, and they're major influences on the Fargo Film Festival. And we'll be back with our preview, but now the news.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. Twin Valley State Senator Kent Eakin says things are quiet at the Capitol in St. Paul, and that's not necessarily a bad thing.
It means that they are actually in negotiations, talking to each other instead of going out and taking swipes at each other.
Minnesota lawmakers are facing the constitutional deadline of midnight on Monday to wrap up work on the session. That includes developing a 2-year budget. Ekid says at this point it is up to the big three to set the finishing pace for the session.
The governor, the majority leader of the Senate, and the speaker of the House to come to an agreement on what the budget size should be and how much should be allocated to each part of the budget.
Eakin says the Republican-led Senate has offered what they call a lights-on contingency bill in case agreement can't be reached this weekend, but he says it doesn't look like it will go anywhere.
Really, it's the Senate Republicans' budget bill, kind of being portrayed as a continuing resolution, but it is a 2-year budget bill. And obviously, it's really a non-starter because there's no compromise in it whatsoever.
Eakin says the Senate proposal could come to the floor for a vote this afternoon. The director of North Dakota's medical marijuana program says he's seen an increase in the number of applications being submitted. Jason Wall says so far his department has issued 420 active patient cards with 250 pending. He says the legislature made some changes that he says will help the program grow. And Wall says that number should also rise once more dispensaries are opened.
We are anticipating an additional dispensary to be opened still in this month and finalizing the opening date for that dispensary, which will be located in Grand Forks.
That will join the Fargo dispensary, which is now open. The other two dispensaries in Bismarck and Williston will likely open in June. And the North Dakota Historical Society is dusting off its collection of moon rocks. The lunar fragments were collected by NASA astronauts during the last mission to the moon in 1972.
These were, I think, collected on Apollo 17, they are, you know, the Apollo mission, and we have them in the State Historical Society collection. We thought we'd exhibit them.
Curator of Education Eric Holland says the lunar samples are larger than a grain of sand, but smaller than a marble. They'll be on display from July 16th to July 24th. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. We're previewing the summer movies with Brittany Goodman, Matt Olien, and Tony Tilton. And, Brittany, I skipped over a release that was in late June. It's Annabelle Comes Home. What's that?
Well, it's the next one in the Conjuring franchise, and those have done very well. They've always been summer movies. And it's kind of timely with Lorraine Warren dying recently. And it's James Wan, who usually directs it, is a co-writer. I'm kind of tired of this franchise myself. But that doesn't mean I won't go see it because I love horror movies.
Okay. Well, speaking of which, Midsommar, which is opening on Wednesday, July 3rd.
Okay. I'm going to admit it. This is the movie I want to see the most this summer. It looks really creepy. And I don't know how you can make Sweden in the middle of summer seem creepy, but I think you can. And it's the director of Hereditary, Ari Aster. And Florence Pugh stars in it, has a nice-looking cast. I've watched both trailers. It looks stunning. And I kind of think about The Wicker Man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
The original.
Yeah.
That creeps
me out already. That was a movie that affected me. And it's not necessarily really gory, but it really affected me.
The original is great with Edward Woodward, right? Yep. Christopher
exactly.
Lee.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm.
This doesn't look gory to me. It looks creepy.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, creepy. Okay. How about Friday, July 12th, The Art of Self-Defense, Matt?
I saw the trailer to this, and it really looks interesting. Jesse Eisenberg plays a man who wants to be able to defend himself, karate and things like that. And it's kind of that typical, you know, Jesse Eisenberg nerd role. That's his words he's describing it as. Mm-hmm. But there's a little twist on this. Looks like it's humorous. Looks like there's some serious parts as well. The trailer looks promising, but again, you never know everything from trailers.
Okay. Well, Stuber.
Stuber, yeah.
Tony, what's this about?
Well, it's kind of if you remember the film Collateral from a few years back with Jamie Foxx and Tom Cruise, and he's a hitman.
Oh, yeah.
Who gets picked up by a taxi driver, and then he makes him, and that was a thriller. This is a comedic take of that, where Dave Bautista plays this killer, or he's a cop who's looking for this killer, and he gets an Uber driver, who's Kumail Nanjiani, and he's kind of takes over his whole Uber driving as his driver for chases and things like that. The trailer looks hilarious. Mm-hmm. It's one of those kind of cop movie, kind of a buddy movie. And Dave Bautista is interestingly doing two big comedies this summer. The next one's coming out in the fall, but he's breaking out as a big actor after Guardians of the Galaxy.
You know, when I see that, I'm wondering, did the executive producer call up Uber and say, hey, we got this idea. Would you like to invest in it?
Great. Hey, it's great promotion for them.
All right. How about Friday, July 19th, The Lion King? Wow. That's pretty big idea.
They have big people attached to this, very, very big stars attached to this film. You know, Donald Glover, Beyonce, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Seth Rogen. Live action. Is it a live action version of Lion King?
CGI,
it's a lot of CGI.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know. I think it's going to be bigger than Aladdin, but will it have the magic of the original Lion King? I just wonder.
Yeah, I'm on the fence on that one. Jon Favreau directs it. He's really good director.
Pretty good director. Yes,
and it's kind of, if you saw the Jungle Book version they did, which was excellent, this is kind of in that vein more so than the Aladdin, as far as I can tell. Yeah, we're going to have to see.
Well, and I don't usually like CGI that much, but the trailer, it looks pretty. I mean, I have to say, I think I might go see this, and I normally would not.
Well, I look at this as a synthesis. It's a remake of an animated film. It's a live-action film, but it's CGI, so sort of a mix of ideas there. July 26th, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Quentin Tarantino. Huh?
This is the film I'm looking forward to this summer. I blow hot and cold on Tarantino, but the time it takes place in 1969 Los Angeles, right before the Manson murders. But it looks to be a multiple plot Pulp Fiction type thing, because if you've seen the trailer, Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio play a stuntman and an actor who work together. And you couldn't find two bigger stars in the world probably than to pair these two guys. But we have the subplot apparently. Margot Robbie plays Sharon Tate. We have someone playing Manson. So how he winds these strands together and creates a homage to late 60s L.A. While also, you know, commenting on the Manson murders, that's going to be tricky. Can he pull this off?
Well, and Tarantino is in – that's his era that he loves. And so having a film set in this time that he can just go crazy with, he shut down Hollywood Boulevard for like 2 weeks shooting stuff with classic cars and everything like that. And I'm looking forward to this one. I've been like Matt, hot and cold on Tarantino the last couple of films especially. So I'm very interested to see this with a huge cast. It's like every A-list actor you can imagine.
Al Pacino's in it.
Burt Reynolds was going to be in it before he passed away. Yeah. What do you think, Brittany? You looking forward to it?
Oh, very, very much so. I actually always like Tarantino, so.
Okay. August 2nd, we've left July, and we're now, Matt, at Dora and the Lost City of Gold.
You know, again, I asked this a couple summers ago about Baywatch. Where's the audience for this? Are we too far past the kids who watched Dora? Now they're grown up, and do the kids now care about Dora?
Yeah.
I think, again, if you can't answer the question where your audience is, I think you're in a little bit of trouble, and that's how I see this going.
Yeah. Okay, because it was a Nickelodeon TV series for a long time. Tony, Fast and Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw. Well, that's a long title.
Well, it's a part of the franchise, but it's not the main Fast and Furious cast. So this is a much more comedic take, and it's a buddy, kind of a buddy cop thing, opposites guys. And if you've seen the trailers at all, they are very funny. It's Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, with Jason Statham, and they've got a couple other really – the plot's kind of insignificant in these kind of things.
Well,
anyway.
Idris Elba and Helen
Idris
Mirren.
Elba. Idris Elba is going to be interesting because he plays this very hopped-up villain in this movie that's had been genetically engineered to be stronger than everybody and everything. So it's a huge action CG fest, you know, and that's as all these things are. But the comedy element is much more prevalent in this film than in the Fast and the Furious films. So I think for that reason alone, it's going to probably attract a lot more people that are interested in – you know, it's going to be an action lover's dream. It's going to be one of the big ones of the summer.
We'll see lots of cars going very fast.
Well, not as many as you would on the Fast and Furious, but you definitely will see a lot of cars.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good enough.
Oh, yeah.
We're to Friday, August 9th, Brittany, The Kitchen.
Well, this one is The Kitchen means Hell's Kitchen.
Ah.
And it's set in 1970s, and it's basically these mob wives who continue to operate their husbands' rackets after they're locked up in prison. Tiffany Haddish, she's hot right now. Elizabeth Moss, Domhnall Gleeson, Melissa McCarthy. And it's the director. The director is, I think, first-time director, but she wrote Straight Outta Compton.
Mm. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's one of the ones I'm really looking forward to.
Okay. Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, Tony.
Well, yeah, this is a reboot of this. You know, if you know the kids series of books that this is based on, the Guillermo del Toro fell in love with these, and he produces this film. And what's interesting about these, they're all set in the late 60s, 68, I believe. And the director of this did a film called Troll Hunter, I believe. And it's a really interesting indie film that came out of Norway, and it's unsettling, and this has got a lot of those same elements. It's the kind of stuff that's like sitting around a campfire telling stories. So it's – if you remember the portmanteau type of films that were done in the 70s where you'd have four or five stories connected, it's that kind of idea. So you're going to – I don't think you're going to be bored watching this movie. I think you're going to probably get a little scared, and I'm sure this is not made for kids even though it's based on kids' books.
Okay.
The design looks good. I like the design of it.
Wednesday, August 14th, Matt, Blinded by the Light is released.
once again, building a film around a famous music artist, the same way we saw with Bohemian Rhapsody, Rocket Man, Yesterday, and now this is based on Bruce Springsteen's song. A young boy in Great Britain connects with his songs. He's Pakistani of origin, living in Great Britain. The same director, I believe, from Bend It Like Beckham. It looks like it's funny. Looks like it's interesting. And again, the hook here is, can Springsteen's music get people into the theaters the way Bohemian Rhapsody did? I'm fascinated to see which of these films will be the biggest between the Elton John, the Beatles, and Bruce Springsteen. And can any of them approach I didn't think Bohemian Rhapsody was that good of a movie,
right.
But it caught the public zeitgeist for sure. So we'll see on this one as well.
Well, it's also interesting to see England has a different film culture than we do, and for producing films as well. And you're seeing a lot more of these kind of dramas and smaller films, but coming out of England than you are in America, simply because the big studios that run the American film industry, they're putting all their money into franchise films right now. So it's hard to see some of these smaller ones. And you're seeing some of these very interesting ideas that are pushing the envelope. You know, Yesterday, what an idea that they're actually pushing. These are all British films, all Bohemian Rhapsody, Rocket Man, this
Blinded by the Light.
Yeah. Blinded by the Light. And so I think you're going to see a lot more of that kind of thing coming from England. So hopefully they get enough support where they can continue to do these.
I'm just wondering, does Bruce Springsteen make any kind of an appearance in this film?
I mean, they don't tell you in the trailer, so we shall see.
Okay. Friday, August 16th, Brittany, Where'd You Go, Bernadette?
Well, I know that Matt and I both are very much looking forward to this one. First of all, it's Cate Blanchett, so anytime she's in something, I want to watch it. The trailer looks absolutely charming, delightful, and hilarious, a really good cast. The premise is she's an architect, Cate Blanchett is, and she has taken time off from that, a long time off from that, to raise her kids. And things happen where all of a sudden she's like, I need to go find myself and I need to find my passion.
And well, Richard Linklater is the director, and he's got a great track record with Boyhood and other films like that.
Well, the last movie on our list is Good Boys. And this is an interesting idea. It sort of reminds me of another film, Tony.
Well, yeah. It's the thing it looks like is like a Stand By Me kind of film about a group of 12-year-old kids. And one of the things that really got this film sold was actually the lead actor, Jacob Tremblay. And it's a kids, a boys' adventure film in a way, and their coming-of-age kind of comedy. It's very much an R-rated film from what I understand for language and that sort of thing. But it's supposed to be hilarious, and Jacob Tremblay is very watchable in this from what I – you know, so looking forward to this one. It's going to be one of those, like I said, I think it's Stand By Me is going to be the one that you're going to think of, that it's like this generation's version of that.
All right. Well, we've got a few minutes left. Let's talk about get each of yours take on what's going to be the big hit for you and what you think is going to be the biggest flop. And let's start with Matt.
I think I'm with Tony. I think Spider-Man Far From Home is probably the box office winner of the summer. It'll be interesting to see if Toy Story 4 or The Lion King does better. That's really a head-to-head.
It's going to be close.
Yeah, between two Disney franchises there. I think Aladdin will be a disappointment at the box office, a big disappointment, I think. I think a couple critical darlings. I agree with Brittany. I think Where'd You Go, Bernadette gets Cate Blanchett into the Oscar mix. And I think Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I'm going to say it becomes an early Oscar contender for Best Picture.
Yeah. Brittany, what do you think? It's going to be a big hit, and what do you think is maybe not going to do as well as they hoped?
I think The Lion King is going to come out pretty close to on top. I also agree with Matt that I don't think Aladdin's going to produce, but a movie we didn't talk about that I think is going to flop, Angry Birds 2. Who wants to see that, right? But again, the one that I want to see the most is Midsommar.
Okay. Is that the what horror film, Brittany, do you think will make the most money?
Probably Annabelle.
Annabelle, okay. Yeah.
But I think Midsommar's
going to be better. Okay.
The critical darling.
Midsommar to me is going to be like The Witch, you know, from a couple years ago.
Tony, your hit and flop.
Hit, again, I'm going to go Spider-Man, but it's going to be a close three-way with, you know, Toy Story and Lion King. In flop, I'm going to, again, with Matt, I'm going to say the same thing with but, you know, in a way, I'm going to link Aladdin, but Godzilla is going to not be as big. Mm. I think it might take that weekend, but overall it's not going to do that great. And I think Taron Egerton might wind up with an Academy Award nomination.
Well, 1 minute left. We lost an iconic film performer, Doris Day.
Doris Day. Pillow Talk, you know. I mean, watch Turner Classic sometime in the next week. They're going to definitely have a Doris Day. But Doris Day, as I was telling some of the younger people I work with, she was the Jennifer Aniston of her generation, for those who did, you know.
How about you, Brittany?
Well, I grew up watching Doris Day, Calamity Jane, Pillow Talk, you know, The Man Who Knew Too Much. You know, she's just very iconic, and I love the song Que Sera Sera.
I think she could have won an Oscar, Doug, as I mentioned to you earlier this week, had she been allowed to do more films like Love Me or Leave Me, which is a serious role with Jimmy Cagney, or if she'd have taken the Mrs. Robinson role in The Graduate. You never know how that would have done with flipping that typecasting.
All right. Our summer movie preview show is done now. We've got Matt O'Lean, Brittany Goodman, and Tony Tilton to thank for their time, and we'll look forward to going to the movies. Coming up next, we talk with Dave Thompson about the big headlines.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
I'm Peter Sagal. Before you whisper your sweet nothings this weekend, make sure you know the scientifically proven sexiest accent to do it in. We'll reveal what it is on this week's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the news quiz from NPR.
Saturday at 10 Central, 9 Mountain.
That wire machine noise in the background means it's time to talk to our news director, Dave Thompson, who joins us on Main Street every Friday about this time. Dave, always a pleasure to recap the week with
you. Well, thank you, Doug. Appreciate it.
Well, a big story that you covered earlier this week, oil production rebounds in March.
Right. February was a bad month because it was so cold and production kind of slacked back because, you know, they couldn't move in the Bakken region. It was too cold. Too snowy at times. And March rebounded because it was just the second half of March. The first half of March was still pretty bad, but the second half of March, things did get better. And we saw rigs moving, we saw crews working, and things are starting to come back. And Lynn Helms, who's our mineral resources director, is now predicting that we'll see record production again, probably for the month of April.
And gas production is also way up there.
Gas production continues to go up, and that is really a problem. If you notice, the target now for capturing gas is 88%. That's 12% flaring. Mm-hmm. State missed that mark. It was down to 80% capture.
Oh,
so
yeah.
There's a real concern that, you know, the infrastructure is – they're building it. They're building new gas processing plants. They're building new pipelines. But it's not caught up yet.
All right. Well, that also reminds us that not so long ago, the governor and Helms were both talking about, you know, this continuing up to about 2 million barrels a day eventually.
Exactly. And it could very well go to 2 million barrels a day, given some of the things that I've been hearing from my sources in the oil patch. Some of the new wells they're drilling are really high-yielding wells. So they're feeling pretty good. And that's in a sweet spot there, you know. That's Dunn, Williams Counties. McKenzie County, that they're getting wells there that are, you know, producing a lot of oil each day.
Well, another sign of the times, a story you had on Monday this week, Montana Dakota Utilities plans to shutter three of its coal-fired electrical generation units because there's natural gas around.
Right. And one plant is in Sidney, Montana. That's going to be shut down. At least that's the plan right now. At Heskett, which is north of Mandan, they're going to shut down the two coal-fired units they have there and replace that with what is called a natural gas peaking plant. So that's one way they're moving out of coal and into different sources of fuel.
It's an interesting evolution we're going through here, and I know it's wrenching in parts of the country.
It
may be wrenching, you know, for some places in North Dakota as well.
It is, but, you know, there's still coal-fired power plants that are working. There are newer plants than Heskett that are cleaner plants than Heskett, and they're still using coal. But really the move, if you notice, wind power has not stopped, now you've got that solar array that's being built out near Castleton. It's interesting. I think we're seeing what one of the public service commissioners said is you're seeing a revolution. in power production.
Well, Montana Governor Steve Bullock was talking this year, because he's running for president now, like lots of other people are, that Montana's coal industry is responding in a similar fashion, that they're and they're looking at alternative fuels in Montana. They've got solar arrays and wind farms going up.
Exactly. And Montana's coal is a little bit better than North Dakota lignite in terms of consistency. But remember, in North Dakota, you have mine mouth plants for the lignite coal. And one of the things that happened is, and I'll just mention this very briefly, the Hoot Lake plant, which is in Fergus Falls, Minnesota, is shutting down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're shutting out two of their units. That coal was being shipped to Fergus Falls from Montana and Wyoming, Powder River Basin coal, and they decided that it was better to shutter them than to pay the rail rates to ship the coal out.
All right. Well, also on Monday, you had this story that the North Dakota Agriculture Department will take over grain inspection. What's behind that?
Well, apparently this is a reaction to roving grain buyer up there in the Devil's Lake region who basically has gone bankrupt, and farmers are feeling they're not getting, you know, fairly treated in terms of getting repaid for grain that they gave to the elevator and to the roving grain buyer. And one solution was maybe to have the Ag Department be in charge of it. The Public Service Commission has long maintained and argued during the legislature is that they could only do so much because the legislature didn't give them the tools to do it. Well, one thing that's happening is that the legislature is giving the Ag Department the tools to do it.
Well, this business up in Devil's Lake involves millions of dollars, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
Okay.
And the PSC is going to continue to handle that bankruptcy proceeding.
Todd McDonald, just yesterday, prison closure proposal rallies community support. This is a very controversial, you know, process. We're talking about rejiggering North Dakota's prison system.
Exactly. We're talking about closing the prison in New England and moving the inmates to Bismarck. And, you know, there was going to be a domino effect. Now, New England really has rallied around keeping that women's prison there. And now it's going to be studied for the next 2 years. And what they're hoping to do in New England is to rally enough support that they'll be able to keep it there and maybe do some repairs on that facility. Remember, what they did was they converted an old Catholic school into that women's prison.
Hmm. We have a new intern here at Prairie Public. His name is Matt Eidson, and he hit the ground running. He posted a story this week about a new wildlife management area.
In Trail County.
Yeah.
That's really interesting because it's a wildlife management area that's going to be UND is involved and, of course, Game and Fish. And it's going to be a pilot project that might lead to more of these things that might be, shall we say, joint efforts between the university system and Game and Fish.
Okay. Danielle Webster had a story on Tuesday that the University of Mary Nursing Program ranks first in the nation.
Right. Caught a lot of us by surprise, but UMary has been doing a lot of work with its nursing program and been marketing it. And there are a lot of students that go to the nursing program. And this thing called, I believe it was Mountain Measurements
is what I see in the
story. Now, we've done a little bit of a background look at that. And Mountain Measurements is one of the big players in terms of measuring nursing schools and how they're doing. So it had a pretty good feather in the cap for UMary.
Well, all 66 graduates from UMary passed on the first attempt. That's
exactly
impressive.
And that's rare. That's rare.
Okay. Let's talk about somebody who you know pretty well, and I certainly remember, Gordon Eisenminger.
Yes.
Is the longest-serving North Dakota State employee who's going to retire from UND after 57 years.
And what an institution. I mean, the man, amazing. His classes were always interesting. Classes were always wonderful. And he kept at it for years and years and years. It truly was a love of his. And now he's decided that he can get some well-deserved rest. But they're going to miss him at UND.
Well, he taught history, and he's lived a fair amount of it.
Yes, he has.
So our best to Gordon Eisenminger.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'll just leave us with this last idea here. There was a red panda that was missing from the Red River Zoo in Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
And the red pandas are pretty prized because they come from China, and they're a hard animal to keep in a zoo. And apparently that was the fact here.
Apparently the Red River Zoo is one of the top in the country, maybe the top in the country in terms of breeding pandas.
Yes.
I thought that was interesting. I thought that might be pandemonium.
Thank you for that, Dave. We'll end with that. They found the red panda, incidentally, inside the zoo in a tree.
Yes.
We've checked out the headlines with News Director Dave Thompson.
The story of the 1942 Elbowoods High School basketball team and what eventually happened to this tiny town on the Fort Berthold Indian Reservation in North Dakota is one of loss and redemption. Basketball, Water, and the Lost City of Elbowoods, Sunday at 5 p.m. Central, 4 Mountain on Prairie Public.
This is Dakota Datebook for May 17th. The area of where Hedinger, North Dakota took root had a rich history even before the town began. The land was hunting ground for the Cheyenne, Sioux, Crow, Arikara, and Mandan people. Frontiersmen traveled on the nearby Cedar and Grand Rivers. The story of Hugh Glass, the mountain man, took place south of Hedinger near today's Lemon, South Dakota. Glass's mates abandoned him after he was attacked by a bear. But according to legend, he survived after limping more than 200 miles to Fort Kiowa. His story was the basis for a novel and movie titled The Revenant. The film starred Leo DiCaprio. Adams County was created out of the southwestern corner of North Dakota in 1907. The county seat of Hedinger came along around the same time, established on the anticipated route of the Milwaukee Railroad. The post office opened on this date. At the time, Hedinger was but a small town of tents and tar paper shanties, but that October, the tracks for the Milwaukee Railroad reached town. A week later, a lot sale was held. The newspaper editor commented on the competitive bids for lots as a testament to the greatest faith in the future development of this new El Dorado of the Dakotas. Buildings quickly went up. Law and real estate offices were established, and the pool hall on Main Street was one of the largest buildings at 24 by 32 feet. When the Gopher Hotel opened, they served 30 to 40 people a breakfast of ham and eggs. Throughout the year, Hedinger and Adams County recorded a number of firsts. First school, first election, and first wedding, which was administered by a judge. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Jack Dura. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
The latest news and political analysis this week between new immigration proposals and Iran. And police officers are part of a suicide crisis in America.
I went inside and I saw a piece of paper, and the line that I read said, "My life was perfect." Past tense.
What some of their loved ones have learned. Saturday and Weekend Edition from NPR News.
7 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
Monday on Main Street, we'll have a history lesson because in the late 1800s, bison were rapidly disappearing from the Great Plains, and that reality prompted action to preserve wild lands and wildlife. A new book that will be released Monday documents that story. It's titled Theodore Roosevelt and Bison Restoration on the Great Plains, and we'll talk to the authors, retired National Park Service Chief Wildlife Biologist Glenn Plum and retired Wildlife Conservation Society Director Keith Owney. We hope you can join us for Main Street on Monday. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.